Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetarlhurstend.com.
Hello and welcome to the Tarlhurst End Podcast Extra in association with the Reading Post for November 7th. My name's Dan Wimbush. I'm the editor of thetarlhurstend.com, an independent Reading fan site and blog. And I'm joined once again by the Reading Post's Reading reporter, Charles Watts. Charles, hello, how are you?
I'm very good. How are you, Dan?
Yeah, not so bad, thank you. I think I'll just start the show with a quick apology for not having a show last week. As you can imagine, it was both our only day off in the week, and Charles being a new father and all that, and myself being a busy man about the town. I wish I had such excuses, but just couldn't quite get the time together to record. So apologies for that, but we're back with a vengeance. And we've got a win to talk about, which is always good, rather than the misery we'd have been talking about last week. Reading picking up that 3-0 win over Rotherham. But before we go into the little good bit of form, briefly touch on the bad, which was that 3-1 defeat up at Blackburn at Ewood Park last Saturday. Not a lot of fans not very happy with the team selection going into that game, with Jamie Mackie and Simon Cox dropped, Charles. And you called Nigel out on this, and he wasn't particularly helpful and friendly with his responses, was he?
No, not at all. He was very defensive after the game. His answers didn't really make sense to me. I got a little bit frustrated with him. The fact he was saying that we shouldn't be questioning on it. You know, he's a manager. He makes the decisions, and that's that. But it doesn't really work like that, I'm afraid. Especially when you've just won. You just ended a 7-game winless run, and the next game you drop the man of the match from that game and your top scorer. You know, you're going to get questions, especially if the result doesn't go for you. And it didn't, they lost. And so the questions are going to come. And to try and sort of fob it off with, look, I'm the manager, you don't have the right to ask me about that. It's just, it didn't lie well with me. And or Tim Deller as well. And, you know, we kept pushing him, eventually got a little bit out of him. But it was, you know, it was just quite a frustrating interview, I thought. And I thought he got that wrong, the way he went about it afterwards, because I think everyone, media, fans, sort of deserve to know why he made the team selection that he did. And the fact is, it didn't work. And so he's going to have to face questions like that.
Did you get the impression he felt he was under pressure at all with the interview? Because a lot of fans were saying, oh, the cracks are starting to show when managers go so uber positive or refuse to accept that they're wrong. Did you get any sort of...
I did get that in that opinion piece. I said at the end that I felt that it was, you know, to go around an interview the way he did there, it felt like he was showing signs of pressure. To be fair to Nigel, he's not out of the ordinary that he does things like this. You know, he's kind of a closed book a lot of the time and doesn't like to explain his decisions. So it's not completely out of character. But I just felt in that particular sort of position after that game that had been lost, he had to explain that team selection, and the fact he didn't was frustrating. And I do think it was showing the pressure. And I think you do. You get ultra defensive. You could just tell it was as defensive I've seen him, really. And I think the only reason is because he knew full well that was 1-8 after that, and he's under pressure. There's no doubt about it.
Absolutely. Well, we run a squad selector now up on thetarlhurstend.com where you can pick your 18. And fans were voting in droves for the ahead of the Rotherham game and were calling for all sorts of changes. I think four changes they asked for. They got one better. And I was like, Nigel going out and making five changes. And it seemed to work, Reading picking up a 3-0 win. But while the scoreline was great, that first half an hour, oh, yeah, awful.
The first half hour was truly terrible. It was everyone in the press box was just laughing at each other, going, my God, this is not a good example of Championship football. Obviously played out in front of a very low crowd, cold night. There's just nothing to get excited about. It was a dreadful game. But once Reading got that goal, I thought it really sparked them into life. For that last 15 minutes of the first half, they were excellent. They could have scored more. Mackie, Cox had shot saves. Norwood's fantastic free kick in the bar. And they carried it on into the second half. I thought a little bit nervy to start the second half. I think sort of changing Ferdinand for Hector just rocked them a little bit. Hector lost his man from a corner early on and Feds had to make a bit of a save. But once they sort of got over that change and settled into a rhythm again, you know, I thought it was a very solid second half performance, capped off with two very good goals. And ironically, the goal scorers in that game just happened to be a certain Jamie Mackie and Simon Cox.
Absolutely no irony there whatsoever. What did you make of the returnees? We obviously had Anton Ferdinand making his debut. We'll come on to the injury updates with him a bit later, but Anton Ferdinand playing, Danny Williams coming into the team, and Stephen Kelly as well making his first appearance of the season.
Yeah, I mean, I was expecting four changes. I've got to say, the one change I wasn't expecting was Stephen Kelly coming in with Chris sort of moving over to left back. But I thought everyone who came in did very well. I thought Anton Ferdinand was very encouraging for that 45 minutes. I thought he wasn't under too much pressure. I'll give him that. But everything he did, I thought he did well. He looked composed. And the really sort of impressive thing about it was there was a lot of communication going on, and he was leading that at the back. And maybe that's something that's been lacking a little bit recently. And I thought it was a very encouraging 45-minute cameo. Danny Williams, I thought, looked rusty. I think he's going to. He did a few nice things and was maybe a slightly off the pace, but I still thought it was a very, you know, impressive comeback, considering how long he's been out, and the fact he got 67 minutes is a real positive, and he's only going to get better. There was absolutely no reaction to his knee or anything like that after the game, so he seems like he's well over that injury now and can really kick on. And Stephen Kelly, fair play to him. You know, he's had his doubters, he's had his critics, certainly last season, but he came in after a long time out, and I thought he did everything he needed to down that right-hand side. He was solid, he didn't take any risks, even pretty much set up the first goal. And it just looked a very sort of solid backline for the first time in a while. And I certainly think we'll be seeing the same back five tomorrow.
Yeah, my only slight area of concern was Chris Gunter at left back. I don't think he looked careful there. He was going on to his right an awful lot. And there didn't seem to be too much of a partnership between him and Jordan Obita, which is obviously understandable. It's the first time they've played together in those roles. But I still think they need that left-footed presence at left back.
Certainly, I spoke to Nigel Atkins about this yesterday. I said, long-term, realistically, is Chris Gunter an option at left back? And he completely disagrees, obviously, what you just said then, because he thought Chris Gunter looked very good at left back and linked up really well with Jordan Obita.
Okay.
Which I have to say, I didn't really see that myself. And I agreed with you, he was cutting inside an awful lot onto his right foot, which is understandable. It's what he's going to do. He's not a left back. And, you know, long term, there's no way that Chris Gunter is going to want to play left back, suddenly switch after 10 years of his career, switch to playing left back. So it's not a long term thing. It's either Chris is going to find himself sitting on the bench and there's going to be a new captain with Stephen Kelly at right back, or eventually they're going to sort of switch back round. I think Nigel just wanted to change that defence. It needed changing, didn't it? Something needed to happen with it. And, you know, for the short term, I think it's a decent idea and it worked. And I think he'll stick with it at least for the next couple of games. But I can't imagine long term we're going to be seeing Chris Gunter at left back. Then you get the option, though, of what can Nigel do at that left back spot? I mean, does he want to try Jordan further forward again now, or is he going to revert back to Obita at left back? It's an interesting one. There's just, you know, everyone's been talking about signing a left back for an awful long time and still no one's come through the door, not even on loan. So you've got to wonder what his plans are long term on that left hand side.
Absolutely. Well, I fear it's going to have to be shipping one of those three right backs out before we're allowed to sign one. But hopefully they can find some money in the budget to do it. But there will be changes to that back five again going into the Charlton game, because unfortunately we mentioned Anton Ferdinand coming off at half time. I understand it's not great news on the injury front.
Yeah, no, he's out. It's a calf injury. It's a completely fresh injury. It's nothing to do with his hamstring, which was the problem before. And it's a real blow. You know, it's just disappointing. As I said, I thought he was really impressive in that 45 minutes and looked like he'd struck up a decent partnership with Piercy already. So it's just annoying that he's going to miss out. But I'm assured from Nigel that it's not a long-term thing, and that he could will be back for the Cardiff game after the international break. So hopefully, touch wood, we're not looking at another scenario, i.e. like Danny Guthrie, who has his calf injury that never seems to go. So hopefully it's just one more game without Anton then. He has a good couple of weeks on the training ground during the international break and is ready to go for Cardiff.
Yeah, well, while bad news on the Ferdinand front, I understand there's more positive news for Gareth McCleary. Could we be seeing him on Saturday?
Brilliant news for Gareth McCleary. I'm so chuffed for him. I tell you, he's hated being out. You know, footballers talk about how much they hate being injured and can't stand watching games. I don't think anyone sort of that represents that more than Gareth McCleary. He can't stand it, and he's had a horrible time sitting on the touchline. So I'm delighted he's back. Will he be involved tomorrow? I don't know. Nigel was being very coy. There's a story going online on Get Reading later today about that. He was being very coy. I think if he is, he's certainly not going to start, obviously. But I wouldn't be surprised to see him suddenly sort of chuck him on the bench. He talks about the international break as a real opportunity to get Gareth up to speed. Now, they've organised 2 90-minute behind closed doors friendly during the international break. As usual with Nigel Atkins, he wouldn't tell me any more than that, or who they were playing or anything like that, if it was even opposition. Or if it was between the Reading sides, but he has organised 2 90-minute games for Gareth to get up to speed. And he's saying, look, you've got to remember he's been out a long time, blah blah blah, saying all that stuff. So in terms of tomorrow, he wasn't giving anything away, but I just wouldn't be at all surprised just to see him maybe get 20 minutes off the bench if the game calls for it, or you know, if the game's put to bed or something or other. I just wouldn't be surprised to see him on the bench.
Yeah, I mean, Nigel doesn't seem particularly adverse to throwing players in. I mean, I've been very surprised at how quickly Ferdinand and Williams have been thrown back into the team. Obviously, it seems to have gone okay. I mean, Ferdinand's a fresh injury, so we can't really say about that. But Danny Williams has been okay. So he doesn't seem like he's adverse to throwing these guys back into the fold. But it doesn't. A couple of players that don't look like they'll be back. Is there any update on Jem Carrigan or Danny Guthrie's involvement, either now or just after the break?
Well, Jem, he's certainly not going to be back for tomorrow. Last time I spoke to Jem, he was kind of targeting the Charlton game, but it obviously hasn't worked out. He's still not fully training with the rest of them. They're taking it very, very cautiously with Jem. He's been out for 13 months now. It's just been a horrible time for him. And the worst thing that could happen now, so close to being back, is for something to go wrong. So it's understandable that they're being cautious. He's desperate to play, but I think they're kind of holding him back and desperately trying to get him fully fit before they chuck him into full contact action. So I think we might have to wait a little bit more time for Jem. Danny Guthrie's a weird one. I don't quite understand what's going on there. He keeps his calf injury just doesn't seem to be going away. He's always on the training ground, he's always around, yet when it comes to playing, it's just not happening at the moment. So it's just a bit of a strange one for me. He's had plenty of scans and no one can really get to the bottom of it. And I was talking to AD Williams about it, and he had a similar injury in his career where I think it wasn't when he was at Reading, it was when he was at Coventry, I think.
Yeah, it might have been Wolves. I remember he had a lot of problems at Wolves after he left Reading.
It was just his calf injury that just wouldn't go away, and there were scans, you know, nothing was picking up, but he just couldn't run, he couldn't play, and he was saying it might be very similar to that. So, you know, it's just a weird one. Whenever I ask when he could be back, you know, he says, the weekend, he could be back for the weekend, we just don't know. Yeah. It depends how he's feeling on that morning of the game, so we'll have to wait and see. I mean, there's no reason he won't be involved tomorrow. I think he's been around the training ground again this week, but as we've seen in recent weeks, whenever it gets to Saturday, he's not on the team sheet.
Yeah, we'll come on to the Charlton game in just a moment. But one other little bit of interesting news that's come around in the last couple of days is, I mean, we ran a report on thetullerston.com earlier in the week that Reading could possibly face a transfer embargo because they're in danger of failing the league's financial fair play rules. Just yesterday, the Football League met in Derby and have agreed a whole set of new regulations, but unfortunately won't cover the period that Reading might fall foul of. So in a nutshell, Reading in the long term might be better off, but in the short term, they could be facing some problems. I know this is obviously still a story that's very much breaking and developing, and I don't know how much you've had a chance to speak to the club about it, but what's your understanding of where the club sit at the moment?
I think in terms of the FFP threshold, I understand that Reading are right on the border, and it's very up and down in terms of what's going to happen if they're going to be hit with embargo. It'd be quite ironic, wouldn't it? Reading have been in about a 2-year self-imposed transfer embargo, and then they finally come out of it and get hit by another one by the authorities. But I think they're right on the borderline. Obviously, the fact that the new owners have come in, I think, makes sort of clouds it even further, because the new owners can actually sort of plough equity into help in terms of FFP, and we don't know if they've done that and the experts in it seem to be saying that Reading, it's hard to call what's going to happen with them. So I haven't been able to tie anyone down at the club to talk about it. I'm certainly far from an oracle on this subject, and I'm very keen to talk to someone. I was trying to get Nigel Atkins on the record about it tomorrow, but he was very keen to point me in the direction of Nick Hammond, who I think is a person who's kind of dealing with all of this. So I'm hoping in the next week or so I can get some time to sit down with Nick Hammond and really go through it, and he can explain exactly where the club is and what the situation is with Reading.
Yeah, as I said, any transfer embargo would be in January.
And there are Glenn Murray deal, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
In a way.
But it's a subject that would take far longer than this podcast to talk about. But if you head over to the tullerston.com and look at our article we posted last week, it's got links to exactly what the regulations are. And there are ways around the transfer embargo. You can bring players in if you're under a certain squad amount and you ship one out and stuff. So I think it's just a case of wait and see. And obviously keep your eyes peeled to get Reading and to tullerston.com, and we'll try and wade through the figures.
It didn't surprise me at all yesterday that the clubs have voted to loosen regulations, because the Championship's such a financial mess at the moment that I think something had to be done, or pretty much every club was going to be hit with a transfer embargo at some point.
I sort of understood the basics behind it. Basically, the existing FFP rules are you can only lose up to 8 million a season, depending on how much money your owner puts in. And the owners had argued, well, that, you know, that on a season-by-season basis, that's not very helpful. So I think they've agreed to switch to a three-year model now, yeah. A bit like what the Premier League
Premier League, yeah.
Yeah, so you can lose X amount over an average over 3 years. So if you need to strengthen particularly one summer, it gives you a bit more freeway. But
yeah. And it's up to about 39 million, isn't it, over yeah. 3 years you're allowed to lose, yeah. Which is obviously a lot more than what it was. So it's going to help with Championship clubs. And like I said, they're going to need that help because the league's not in the greatest financial strength at the moment.
Yeah, and the fact that the new proposals went through, I think 18 votes to 6 says that this is a problem that's afflicting the whole of the Championship. This isn't just a few spoilt clubs kicking up a fuss. This is this is a wide range. I've got to believe Reading voted in the yes column as well.
I would say they did.
Anyway, let's move off the field matters back onto the pitch. Very quickly, quick look ahead to Charlton tomorrow. A team that started the season really well. They were unbeaten for what I think the first 11 games of the season, and they've just had a bit of a wobble now. One win in their last 6 games. That coming at home to Bolton, who aren't exactly pulling up any trees. Is this a Charlton team on the slide that Reading should be looking to take advantage of, or is this a, I don't want to say a sleeping giant, but is Reading exactly the game Charlton are looking forward to get back on track?
Well, I mean, Charlton haven't lost many games still. You know, they haven't won too much recently, but they don't lose many, do they? Even on Tuesday night, they went up to Leeds and they were training a couple of times, I think, and fought back and got a point. And I think that's what Bob Peters has sort of instilled in this year. They're very much a surprise package. I'm really surprised how well they've done. I know quite a bit about Charlton. My brother's a mad Charlton fan. He's actually going to be at the game tomorrow. And at the start of the season, I didn't give them a prayer at doing what they have done so far. The fact that they went, like you said, 11 games unbeaten at the start of the season shows they're a difficult team to beat. So this will be far from a foregone conclusion for Reading. But I do think that Reading are going to win. I've got to say, sort of much of the struggles have been this season. Most of them have been away, haven't they? Reading score goals at home. I think it's only Watford have scored more. I think five times they've scored three times. And I just think they're going to have a little bit too much for Blackpool. I think confidence is certainly going to be up. There's players in form going forward. And I'm expecting a Reading win. I don't think it will be, you know, another 3-0 like we've seen the last two games. I think it will be tighter than that. But I fancy Royals to nick it.
Yeah, well, earlier in the week on the main edition of the show, I predicted a 1-0 defeat because I don't trust myself to predict 2 wins in a row.
I heard, I listened to it.
Westy and Johnny both gone for draws. So you're going for a Reading win then?
I'm going for 2-1 Reading win.
Yeah, for a 2-1 Reading win. Well, he's second in the prediction league, 2 points behind Johnny.
I thought I was going to catch up with him, and he got the 3-1 last week as well.
Yeah, both.
And he got money on it.
Yeah, unbelievable. Well, he posted that in the we have a little chat between Tyler said editors, and he posted that when it was 1-0 Justine. I thought that's not going to happen. Surely, sure enough, I'm just like, oh,
nice work. 3-figure sum, I believe.
Yeah. He's buying the drinks at the Christmas special. Don't you worry about that. Right. Anyway, that just about wraps up the show for this week. Will you be web chatting again on Wednesday, or are you taking a week off due to international break?
No. I'll be web chatting. I've got a couple of weeks off coming up over end of November, early December. So very much all go until then.
Excellent. Well, check out getreading.co.uk for all the latest from Charles and plenty of Reading news and analysis. And also, if you look after some fan-based feedback, analysis and opinion, head over to tarlesden.com. Also, just a quick plug, please subscribe to the show on iTunes. It means you get this show straight to your phone or device. Plus, you get the main edition of the show, which last Monday featured Rob from The Two Unfortunates, which was a really good listen. Always good to get a different voice on. Westy won't appreciate me saying that. but he will be back on Monday, and hopefully me and Johnny will be as well. So anyway, thanks very much, Charles. Have a good weekend. Here's hope into 3 points for everyone but your brother's sake. And I'll speak to you again next week.
All right, have a good weekend.
Cheers, take care, Charles. Bye-bye.
Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetarlhurstend.com.